What's up, everybody? Welcome to the Smoking Tire Podcast. This episode of the podcast brought to you by Continental Belts and Hoses. You know, when you're under the hood, have you ever noticed how often you see Continental Belts? The answer is, or should be, all the time. There's a reason for that. Continental is one of the world's largest original equipment suppliers for the automotive industry. Automakers around the world insist on Continental for original equipment belts. In the U.S., all the big three, BMW, Volkswagen, over 30% of all new vehicles sold in North America. You know what that says? It says Continental knows OE because they are OE. Continental's OE technology series multi-V belts for the automotive aftermarket are precision engineered for perfect fit, form, and function with the true OE pedigree. They're the belts engines already know, so you can confidently spec Continental's multi-V belts in your car. There's one for 98% of vehicles on the road today. You might not know it, but Continental is also a leader in automotive technology, electronic components for things like autonomous driving and accident-free zones. That focus on innovation is in every product they make, including OE Technology Series aftermarket belts. Check them out. Oh, man, we also have a new partnership with Blipshift. You've probably heard of them. They make automotive T-shirts. They do these quick sales. It's a great company to work with, great group of people. We're so happy to have them as our official merchandise provider. And we're going to be doing a new shirt with them every month. Last month, was the California wildfire shirt to benefit the California Fire Foundation dealing with those horrible fires here in California. We were able to raise over $15,000. We gave all the money to the California Fire Foundation. We took none for ourselves, which was a great thing. And I hope you guys all have your shirts by now. And I hope you're all enjoying your shirts by now. Our next shirt is out in the store right now until for 2 weeks, December 10th through December 24th. It's a safari shirt. It's my 9/11 safari dashing through the snow, flying through the air. It's a really cool shirt. I love the design. We're super stoked on it. Go to thesmokingtire.com and click on the store tab. That will take you straight there, or you can find it directly at Blipshift. But the easiest way is just go to thesmokingtire.com and click on the store tab at the top and get yourself this really cool 9/11 safari shirt over by Blipshift. It is badass. I'm all about it. Okay, on this episode of the show, we've got racer Cody Miles in studio. I met Cody at Global Time Attack, and I've seen him drive a bunch of times. Cody is unique in that he is the only race car driver I have seen to race a Time Attack vehicle that is on air suspension. Which is not typical of race cars. You know, air suspension is typical of cruisers and show cars, but Cody is extremely successful at racing a car on airbags, and that to me is very interesting and worth talking about. So here he is, Cody Miles, on this episode of the Smoking Tire Podcast.
Yeah, we already are. Fuck it. Smoking Tire Podcast. Hello, hello, hello. It's the evening. Mr. Cody Miles.
Hello, hello.
Welcome, sir.
Thank you. Happy to be here.
Time Attack driver. Good-looking gentleman in glasses.
Boom.
Fucking driving a very unique race car.
Yep.
Ran into this fool at Time Attack at Buttonwillow. Global Time Attack. But you run multiple Time Attack series, right?
Yeah, I play
Grid
around
life
with
one.
Yeah, I try to just hit any big event that is fun. Honestly, I mean, we try to get as much exposure as we possibly can. So, Global Time Attack Super Lap Battle is always a huge one at the end of the year.
Yeah,
and then Grid Life. If none of you guys have been to a Grid Life event, it's
Grid
Life's
really
ridiculous.
Fun. Yeah, it's a good. That's a good fun event.
Yeah, tons of fun.
Even when you actually care about a trophy, can you get as drunk as I can get at Grid Life?
Not really, no. No, I got to kind of play it safe a little bit.
Day three, I don't have to really do any driving at Grid Life, so I get like nice and fucked up on Saturday. Night at Grid Life is the craziest shit ever.
Dude, it's wild.
Golf cart battle.
Oh my God, golf cart wheelies. Are you kidding me?
Dude, they prepared in Atlanta this year. When I got down to like the Forsberg and Turk's little tent, and I got down there at about I don't know, 11 p.m. or midnight, and they had like 22 golf carts just lined up.
What? Wheel-to-wheel session?
It was like, oh no, they're fucking ready. And it became like party-crashing fucking mob boys.
Dear God.
Yeah, and I jumped in with Larry Chen, and it was fucking on, bro. It was crazy.
Did you guys hit the downhill into the inner
We didn't go
paddock?
On the track, but we went, dude, in the tent city, and it was like driving through Vietnam or
Is that
shit.
Road Atlanta?
Yeah, Road
oh,
Atlanta.
Oh, dude, there's a downhill into the inner parking lot, like the inner paddock.
Oh, the time yeah,
oh my God, that down, if you throw her into neutral, you'll do
you
like 40
big,
down
yeah,
that
big
hill.
Speeds.
Yeah, it can be bad.
Yeah, there's big fucking speeds going on. It doesn't have the density of Gingerman, though. Like,
I like the track better at Road Atlanta.
Yeah, of course.
But I like the festivities and the wildness of Gingerman.
Because Gingerman, you need to have 10 times as many people at Road Atlanta to make it feel as full as Gingerman. And Gingerman,
yes.
All the camping is in one area.
Yes.
So like,
it's consolidated into just
like,
masses.
All
you gotta
do is
walk.
And the spectating is all in the same place. And then everyone gets funneled through
exactly.
Like the fucking...
Yep. Herding cattle.
Yeah. And so it really works. It really works for partying.
Absolutely. Yeah. Most ridiculous thing I've ever been to.
Did you... I just talked to Stuart at Global Time Attack. Chris Stuart, by the way, mm-hmm. runs Grid Life. He mentioned a new track for Grid Life this year. Did he mention it to you?
Yes.
I'm fucking blank. I feel like... Oh, I think I'm going to say it. Pike's Peak,
you
right?
You say it, not
in
me.
In Colorado.
I don't know if I'm supposed
Pike's
to say
Peak
it.
Pike's Peak International Raceway in Colorado, right?
Yeah, that's the idea.
That's the one.
That's what he mentioned to us.
Yeah, because that's a NASCAR Roval, right? It's like a small Roval.
Yeah, from what I hear, it's a Roval. I've never looked into
but
it
I
personally.
I think it's like a half-mile Roval. Like, it's little.
Yeah, that's my understanding.
Tim, can you pull up a Google Earth of Pike's Peak International Raceway?
I can.
Oh, yeah, Cody, if we talk about shit, they can go into the... He can pull it up, and it goes into the show.
Dude, it's fantastic.
It's fucking... It's like a genius... It's like almost like professional-level broadcasting. Almost.
It's perfect.
Yeah, look at that.
Is there a better quality image?
So I know he's got some exciting things planned for this. He wants to make it a little
bit
different.
Oh, that could be fun as fuck, dude. I mean, it would be like mildly Grimes, but also pretty fun. I like the big skid pad in the middle. You could make a fucking like Gymkhana course in this shit.
We probably should. If anybody's going to do it, it's going to be Grid Life. They know what's going down.
Yeah, and they know like how to have a party.
They absolutely
and how to have a track day.
Dude, the first time I went to Gingerman, I stumbled across baby oil wrestling.
Really?
In a swimming pool. Yeah.
in the
kiddie swimming pool. Oh yeah. Oh yeah, dude. And before I knew it, I was just egging on whoever. It was just like pick which guy.
Well, there was
a lot of dudes.
One of the best pictures I've ever been a part of is someone stopped me and handed me a super soaker full of beer.
Oh,
and
dude.
And was like, dude, I want you to blast me in the face. And it was like 2 a.m. I was really drunk. And I fucking
no hesitation.
Pumped this shit like 40 times. And just from me to you, four feet, just right into the mouth.
Wait.
And the fire hose
hold on.
Stream.
Was that a Gingerman?
Yeah.
And it took 2 beers or something like that. And then the kid stood there with no shirt.
Yeah, were you there for
I
that?
Walked by you when you did that, dude.
It was
ridiculous.
It was unbelievable. And the guy was like a gladiator. It was, it was a fucking ridiculous.
He had like 35 cell phones out in slow motion
yeah,
filming the entire thing.
Everybody had the slow-mo happening. The slow-mo video is really incredible of it.
God.
I'm sure someone will fucking post that shit up. That shit is
so did
so
you say
funny.
Dudes were baby oil wrestling
oh,
in
yeah.
the pool?
Oh, yeah. Maybe the occasional chick, but not when I walked by.
It's not gay to the racetrack, dude.
Yeah, 20 bucks is 20 bucks, dude.
So funny. So I randomly, you know, like interviewed you for the fucking Global Time Attack stream, which was cool. But
yep,
I've seen
mode.
Your car for like running for like 3 years now.
It's been a few years, yeah.
It's a fucking Subaru, but it's on air suspension.
It is
which
a little bit different.
Yeah, it's the only race car I've ever seen on air suspension.
Yeah, it's fun being a little different.
Yeah, is that? I mean, you can be honest. Is that by choice or by sponsorship?
I'm gonna be completely honest.
Yeah.
I give the same answer to anybody that asks this question. The car started off as a daily driver. So back when I was like, hell yeah, I want the car slammed and low. I want the car to be able to look exactly how I want it, park it and do whatever.
Yeah.
But I still don't want to take away from the performance of it because like a Hawkeye STI was like my dream car growing up.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't want to take performance away from what it already has, right? So my mindset was like, okay, if we can improve performance and make it versatile in the aspect of like speed bumps are death,
yeah,
driveways
yeah.
are death, right?
Yeah.
So
especially in LA.
Oh my God, dude, where you have to plan out, you got to like map out your
no
drive.
Shit.
I have a low static 240. The thing is, it's silly, dude. It's like 2 inches off the ground. Yeah, it's a disaster, but it's funny in its
own
way.
For those who don't live in Los Angeles, we don't have sewers here. our sewers are on the street level, and so when it rains, the gutters have to carry the water on the street, so you can't drive a fucking lowered car here. Yeah. It's a problem.
Yeah, anyway, so the convenience factor was the main thing that appealed on top of, like, hey, if it can do what these guys are advertising, like, I was not associated with them at all in any way, and I was like, okay, let's, I'm looking for suspension, so it's either these coilovers or air suspension. Let's try some air suspension. Mm. So then I got it, and I knew nothing. I had never installed an air kit before. I don't know. I just went for as light as possible. So I did like an aluminum 3-gallon tank. I did a single compressor, bare bones setup. No wood grain, no super sick NOS painted tank or anything like that.
Just, I recommend the wood grain.
I mean,
dude, what would be wood grain?
That's weight, dog.
No, wait, what would be wood grain? Seriously, the tank?
Oh, dude, you go in the trunk? Have you seen some of these show cars? They get so gnarly.
I've seen like VIP cars and shit setups. With like the tea trays and stuff.
Oh,
what do they put the wood grain on? Like a speaker
wood
box
grain base.
And then
put everything and then hardline everything.
Yeah,
I saw one car that had the roll cage was the tank. So the
I'm
compressor,
sorry? Like
the
a
compressor,
Buell? Like a Buell was, motorcycle where the fuel goes in the frame.
Yeah. So you've got a roll cage that is holding your compressed air for your air suspension.
Are you fucking kidding me?
Dude,
what happens if you get into a crash, bro?
I don't know, but it surprised the hell out of me, and I was like, hey, that's unique. I've never seen that before.
An actual pressurized roll cage.
Yeah.
Forgive me. That does not sound safe.
I mean, maybe it was more of a show car than a go-car. I don't know.
That's crazy. Like, you know those Buell motorcycles? Have you seen those things?
Yeah, a little bit.
A Buell motorcycle is like a sport bike that uses a Harley Davidson engine, and this guy Eric Buell designed them, and they're very fucking trick and really, really cool. They're weird because they sound like Harleys, but they look like sport bikes, right? And the biggest trick piece of stuff in a Buell
is the frame is
the fuel tank.
Okay.
So the thing that looks like the fuel tank isn't the fuel tank.
What is the thing that looks like the fuel tank?
It's the air box. The intakes come from above, from an air box in the fucking thing.
Damn.
So that whole thing is hollow and very light, and the fuel is lower in the fucking frame, which is very cool. But to me, like I've driven like performance car. I drove it was a street S4 on air suspension, and like I thought it handled pretty good. To me, it didn't handle quite as good as you could make a great coilover.
Mm-hmm.
But considering and you know all that other shit,
exactly.
It was good.
Yeah.
But to me, the one thing that could be a little sketchy is having a tank of compressed air in your trunk in the event of a crash. That to me, no.
No, I mean I've got a metal bulkhead in between me and it.
Yeah, that's true.
It's back in the trunk.
That's true. Yeah.
So that's my
in the fucking cage seems weird.
Yeah, cage. I wouldn't do in the cage, but it was a unique idea.
It is a unique idea, but imagine what it takes to make the cage then like airtight and everything, right?
Yeah, probably a pain in the ass. But it looked sick because there was no tank and it was all gutted and everything. Yeah, it was pretty cool.
I guess you save some weight. Potentially.
Yeah, you do. But the compressor is generally the heaviest part of the equation.
Is it?
Unfortunately, yeah.
Is the tank aluminum?
Tank's aluminum. Yeah. Tank really doesn't weigh much at all.
It just looks substantial because it's a big metal thing.
Yeah, but when it's an aluminum tank, like they really are not very heavy. It's the damn compressors that are the weight
multiple?
Killers. No, I have one.
You okay?
A lot of people run two just because they want to fill their tank quicker.
Right.
More up and down per X amount of time.
Right, and you don't want to, the less time you have to listen to it go,
yeah,
you don't really want to do that.
Exactly, but since mine was more of a performance-oriented setup, I didn't care if it took longer.
Right.
I wanted less weight.
And it's not filling and emptying while you're on the track driving.
No, only if you're using it.
Yeah.
Only if you dump the air out of it and then need to refill it.
Right, but you don't do that while you're fucking racing the car. You would do that at the most in between sessions.
Yes, at the most. Or
if you go off.
Yeah.
That is brilliant. If you go off, you just raise the car up
to
get back on.
Any rumble strip come at me. Yeah, no. But no, the sickest thing would be finishing a lap that you know is fast and just rolling up to like the podium and just airing out. That would be gangster.
I've yet to do that. That's
been a thought in the back of my brain, but I'll probably never do it.
Yeah, if you roll up to like the checkered fucking victory lane and you're like, oh, that's fucking.
Yeah, it just confuses a lot of people. It's funny how many people still don't realize. It's like, I tried to get this gigantic airlift sticker on the side, right? There's just a lot of people that they're like, it's not really on air, is it? I'm like, absolutely. It's absolutely on air.
Wait, who's that? That's an R34.
Oh, that is not your good car. Friend of mine, Kyle Perdelford, with his garage built R34. That thing's gnarly.
That's fucking cool. Tim pulled up a picture of an engine for Zane. I was like, oh, that's not a super
big
engine.
Brushed, covered RB26. Yeah. It's gorgeous.
R34s are lovely.
Yeah, they're super sick.
Yeah. Have you had a go in one before?
I have not.
They are the best.
I've been idolizing them since I was a child.
Have you driven any GTR?
Nope.
Our old Skyline one?
Nope.
They're fucking dope. They feel much newer than...
Really?
Yeah, they feel much, much newer
than... What about
the
R35?
I'm not a big fan. They're very
effective. My guess is that it feels like a fat pig off the bat.
It does, but it's a fat pig that has a lot more grip and shit than you'd expect it to.
Okay, computers.
But it's not nearly as fun as a Skyline.
Okay.
Like, it feels like... Honestly, like, for the shit you do, like, if you would take an R35 and do... A nice suspension, nice big fucking wing, a couple basic power mods and shit. Like, you have a very effective track tool that will ask, like, nothing of you.
Yeah.
But...
The biggest thing with those things is that they're heavy.
God, they are heavy.
Damn, they're heavy.
Yeah. There's some certain shit you can do with tires to really... Like, I think they run 305s all around or
they
something.
They probably run larger tires.
Yeah, yeah. And there's a few folks I know that can make them just do crazy shit, but they're not as fun as a lighter car, as, you know.
Yeah.
And that the it's R34, like an RB engine, is just a wonderfully fun.
Oh, the sound alone.
Yeah.
Wow.
That smooth kind of zing you get with those cars, it's really nice. V6s don't sound good, typically.
Typically, yeah.
They're either like real trumpety.
Yeah, it's like my 350Z, dude.
Yeah.
It's just kind of drones.
They grind, they drone. Yeah, yeah. You have a 350Z also?
Yeah, that's the daily.
Oh, that's the daily? All right, yeah. You can kind of fix that with like one of the single exhausts. If you do the single titanium exhaust, you can fix that.
See, that's the thing is that I hate the way like fart cans look sticking out of the bumper. So I cut that shit halfway underneath the car so you just can't see it.
Oh, really?
And then when you're driving, it's just.
Oh, my God. It echoes underneath the car.
Yeah, it's not it looks
like. Oh, is that right there? Sliding it at the balcony?
Yeah, so that was.
Do you have an angle kit on it too?
No, it's factory, dude.
Oh, it's a lot of angle for factory.
Not too bad, right?
Mike.
That was a video that I got to do with Red Bull UK.
Oh, fun.
So Queen Bee came out to the States. That was a
bunch
project.
Bunch of good folks out there. Mad Mike's hilarious, dude. That guy rules.
Yeah. I didn't get to meet him. I got to meet Rad Dan. He was ripping the Supra out there.
I don't know. Who's Rad Dan?
Blue Supra, Formula D.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I know that guy.
Mullet.
I know of him, yeah.
You just got to know the mullet, dude.
That car.
That thing is gangster.
Yeah, I know that car. I think it's pretty cool. Wait, so when you are setting up an air suspension car to race.
Yes, that's where I become a little bit different than probably any air suspension car that you've ridden in.
Right. Well, how do you judge what to do? Like what to set the car at?
Trial and error, first of all. So, like, a lot of, you know, like, if we were out on track, we both had M3s or something like that in their coilovers, I'd be like, hey, you're going faster than me. What's your spring rate?
Right.
I want to try to make mine handle like yours. That was the biggest thing for me to overcome, is that I can't compare spring rates of any kind to anybody.
Right.
That was the hard part. So, it was a lot of trial and error. And luckily for me, the engineers at Airlift Performance are actually into driving hard and fast and on track and stuff. They do it on their own. It's their hobby as well. So I had a solid support.
Trying to hit the table. The fucking audience is the one that's going, stop it!
Sorry, guys, sorry. All right,
sorry, continue, sorry.
So they have a solid foundation of knowledge and everything for trying to get performance out of suspension. I mean, these engineers put a ton of work into it, not to just make your car look cool, but to make it actually do things. And unfortunately, it's something that a lot of people don't take advantage of with it. But I mean, I'm looking at a kit to where I don't care if I limit it to where it only goes up and down an inch and a half or so.
Right.
Right? I'm not looking to raise the car a ton to get over huge driveways and stuff like that. I will sacrifice that to get the desired spring rate, if you will, out of it.
Right.
So like right now, my rear doesn't travel very much. My front, my rear end, for anybody with a Subaru out there who's looking to get their Subaru handling better on air suspension, I basically tried to everything to get the rear as stiff as possible.
Okay.
So that was something that I had to overcome.
To get the back to rotate more?
Holy crap, dude. Subaru's push like no other.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So I've done everything in my power to make the car oversteer more.
So it's an air spring.
Yeah, so picture a coilover.
And is there also a damper?
Yeah,
there's
absolutely.
There's also, okay, is it a normal damper or is it a...
Yeah.
Okay.
So picture a coilover.
Right.
Literally just erase the spring and draw a bag, and that's exactly
what
it is.
At the top or the bottom? The top.
Right where the spring would be.
Okay. And that's it.
It's exactly
the same. So do you use
like
a Bilstein damper or something? Like a
yeah, I believe it's. I believe it might work with BC.
Okay,
on that, but
it's like an off the rack damper.
It's off the shelf damper.
Cool.
Exactly.
And you don't need like some kind of like super super fancy damper, right? You can use any performance damper works. Right?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, we've got. Dude, I'm only using one way adjustments. Like.
Yeah.
I've got nothing crazy. I don't have JRZs that have all your adjustments in the world that are just gangster.
If you had those, they'd probably just adjust them wrong.
That's the other thing a lot of people don't realize is that, dude, suspension comes down to how much work you're willing to put into adjusting and setting it up. You can take a piece of crap set of coilovers or whatever. If you adjust them to actually balance the car properly, they will work pretty damn well.
I mean, I've heard some people shit on various brands of coilovers, and I've seen well set up versions of them that drive pretty
fucking
good.
See, that's the thing, is that coilover suspension, period, it's not an off the shelf throw it on the car and be done thing. That's one of the biggest things I try to preach, is that like everybody's like, oh, you're on air suspension, is it bouncy? I'm like, no, I worked at, I don't know what bouncy means as far as air suspension, but I worked
sometimes I mean, on street cars, if people just put a kit on, it can be a little bouncy.
Okay, I would assume that your pressures are too low if you're doing that. So then you need to adjust the threaded body and, you know, add more pressure to the bag. So basically adjust the collar, the lower mount, let's say, like if it was a McPherson style structure like that. Just like you would a coilover. Just lower that bottom mount and then inflate more air. So you're creating a stiffer, you're keeping the same ride height, but you're adding stiffness.
Oh, because you're replacing
shock
travel with spring.
You're shortening
the
physical height of the entire unit.
But running a higher pressure.
And then adding air.
Oh, yeah.
To where you have the same ride height, but you're now stiffer.
Oh, that's interesting.
There's all kinds of stuff to it, dude.
Hmm.
But, yeah, that's the thing. Is like, it started off as a daily driver, and it was everything that I needed it to be, and it was super convenient, and Subarus are not reliable at all, so it would blow up, and it would do stupid things. The car blew out the engine. I seized the engine before I even got home, and I bought it.
Really?
The day I bought it, dude.
You bought it?
Oh, yeah. Seized the entire long block.
Oh.
Yeah, I'm...
Just bad luck, or did you fuck up?
Just terrible luck.
That
horrible
sucks.
Luck. The oil pickup, which is basically the straw sticking into the oil pan, you know? It cracked. Because Subaru decided to braise it instead of, like,
just
make an actual
piece. Bad luck?
That's just horrible timing, yeah.
Really? And it was, horrible. Like, fine the day
Dude,
you bought it?
I was 1 mile from my house, and I just heard this clunk, clunk, and the car shuts off.
That
I was like,
I did
not just hear that, did I? And then you try to start it, and it's just, and it's just struggling, dude. And I ended up starting it the next day, and it was the worst metal-on-metal sound you've ever heard. So check this out, dude. Once we pulled the engine, the crankshaft had walked backwards towards the rear of the car, and pulled the crank pulley into the timing covers.
Oh, that's bad.
It was grinding.
Yeah,
so you have, at that point, you have warped everything. You have
bent rods.
You have warped cams.
Is
literally,
the block even reusable at that point?
Threw the entire thing in the trash. Found another Subaru that had caught on fire and bought the engine from that.
Nice.
Yeah.
There you go.
God, man.
That sounds like race cars.
Yeah, EJs are hard engines get reliability.
Dude, my Porsche you saw, my 911, I drove it to the track that day, drove it home, I had it like 3 days.
Yeah.
The very next day, it started smoking like crazy. It turns out I need a complete top end rebuild.
Oh, like I thought Porsches were just like, you can turn the key and race it and then take it home.
I could keep fucking driving it if I wanted. Like, I could drive it for 50,000 miles like it is if I wanted, if I was comfortable, like, smoking out the whole neighborhood, which I'm not. You know what I mean? But, you know, I know what it's like to buy a car and bring it home and then immediately have to put all this fucking money into it.
Yeah,
it stinks.
It's hard. I mean, the rest of the car, like, the rest of the GD chassis or even the GC chassis, GCs are, I think, a little bit floppy. I think you need to, like, they mean more
like,
reinforcement, stitch welding, and
but the short wheelbase is helpful.
Oh, dude,
like
they're light.
The two-door
they're
RS
badass
is
cars.
Shit.
Yeah, they're badass cars. But like the GD,
and they look really good.
They look fantastic, and they're small and lightweight and all that. But yeah, the GD, like I love the car. It handles great. Like I'm finally at a point where like it handles solid. Like where I can make adjustments mid corner. Where I'm like, oh my god, am I gonna die? Nope, the car's got it. And but the engines are just the hardest parts on Subarus.
Yeah,
you can have the best guys in the world building them, which I do. I work with Renner Racing Development. And those guys know their shit. And
the engine still blow up.
You can't you can't keep horsepower in an EJ, dude.
So why bother?
Because it was a dream car growing up and I'm unwilling to change it.
I
you know how many times I've heard
stupid.
Throw an LS in it. Dude, throw an LS in it.
Well,
oh
that's not
God.
The answer. The answer would be to just have a different car.
I'm too invested, dude. I'm too deep. I'm way too deep. I don't think there's any going. Like, I could have bought a house, but instead I built a Subaru.
I know how that goes.
Yeah.
I definitely know how that goes.
I had a very good friend of mine who fucking races a 94 Neon in fucking like 94? NASA touring something or other. And he added up his costs for a season for racing a 94 Neon, and he could have bought a fucking Gallardo. Like, he could have bought a Lamborghini for the amount of money he spent racing a Neon. Like, 120 horsepower piece of shit.
Oh, man. Yeah, people don't
realize
how much.
Racing is so expensive.
It's hard, man. I mean, like, I just came from work to be here. Like, it's not just like, I'm a race car driver and that's what I do. I would love it to be that way, dude, but honestly,
probably there's like six people that are professional.
Yeah,
race car
it's
drivers.
Hard, man. I mean, it's the biggest love-hate relationship I've ever found, too. Yeah. It's like racing and accomplishing like goals and going faster and getting more partnerships and organizing more awesome people. It's the coolest thing I've ever done, and it's the highest highs I've ever felt. But at the same time, like, I've shed tears over that car. Like, it has made me so angry and just beaten me down so many times. It's a constant roller coaster of like I wrote a blog about it, highest highs and lowest lows.
Yeah.
Like, it's
I understand
brutal,
that.
Man.
So like, all right, with Time Attack, it's pretty much like there's a class for almost anyone. Like, someone can show up to Global Time Attack.
Time
like,
Attack is
you
very
can show
welcoming.
Up with your fucking daily and like race that.
Absolutely,
there's a class for that.
There's this guy, he goes by Baby Ferrari Racing. Mm. I think he just got a Type R, but he was running, I think, a Dart before that. This dude would drive. I think he lives in Michigan or something.
Oh,
like that.
Oh, I talked to this fucking kid.
Yes.
Is it
he
black
drives
kid?
He drives his car.
I hate to identify someone by race, but he was the only black dude there.
I don't remember his name, but I just remember Baby Ferrari Racing.
He drove his shit from fucking the North Peninsula of Michigan, I think.
Yes, yes. Okay, he drove from Michigan to Super Lap Battle in Bakersfield, a.k.a. Buttonwillow.
Yeah.
And then drove the son of a bitch back.
Yeah, he said he was going to drive into a snowstorm on the way home. And
dude,
I was like, do you have different tires? He's like, nope, R comps.
Lunatic, but I love it.
And I think he got a trophy.
Yeah, he was on the podium.
I think he had the fastest front wheel drive street car, whatever. Like,
I think so. I think it was
he ran like a 55 or something in a fucking Civic Type R.
That's
it was
awesome.
Fast.
It's awesome.
Yeah, it was really fast.
And then drove the thing like 2,000 miles home. That's so gnarly.
Extremely gnarly. But then like other people were there in like totally normal street cars. Like, I saw some normal-ass cars that were running, like, with fucking...
A couple normal Mustangs, a couple normal Porsches.
Rental cars. Remember the dudes in rental cars?
Yeah.
The guys who...
Camaro?
Challenge Camaros. Camaros. Okay. They broke their race car and just fucking fucked off and rented two Camaro SSs from... I don't know what agency it was, but he ran a 59 in it.
Not bad,
on fucking run flats.
Yeah, sub 2 in a stock car. That's
those guys.
Good.
Everyone saw that hype about that fucking Tesla Model 3 performance and shit. Homie smoked him in the rental Camaro.
That's pretty impressive. Yeah. I think the Tesla went. Did it go sub 2 minutes though?
No, they ran a 200.7 or something.
So close.
Not that what they were doing wasn't cool. I enjoyed talking to those guys, and they were very enthusiastic and not. A lot of people who own those cars, and especially people who fuck with them, are chill as fuck. But the internet people are like, see, and it's like, I saw, and I was there, and I watched homie beat him in a rental Camaro, so shut the fuck up. Chill.
I think they're probably heavy as hell, too, those Teslas.
Model 3s? Model 3 Performance, they are heavy, but...
All those batteries, I don't know.
The batteries
I'm uneducated.
But the batteries are in the floor.
Oh,
so that's what it's
that
all
helps.
About. They're heavy, but it's all-wheel drive, and the center of gravity is super fucking low, and because it doesn't have an engine in the front, it's low and it's concentrated in the center. So they do have very good balance.
Strategic about it.
Yeah. The problem is, if you're used to a normal car, for you, in your Subaru, it's like, okay, turn one is going to be third gear.
Yeah, that's, if I don't have noises, dude, or gears.
No noises,
it's
no
a different
gears.
Game.
Yeah, so it's really hard to judge corner entry speed.
Yeah, some people may not realize, but judging your speed without any sound.
Very hard.
Dude, I'll play my simulator at home without audio, without a headset. It's terrible. I can't do it, dude.
That's like, what it's like to drive a Tesla into a corner. Automatic. You put your simulator on automatic, the sound off. That's exactly what it's fucking like,
no,
dude.
That's
so crazy.
I don't think I'd be able to do that.
Yeah, no, it's brutal. But so that's the hard thing about that. But conversely, at the apex and at the corner exit, all you hear is tire noise, and so you can actually, and you don't just hear like a general, you know, squealing, you can go, oh, that tire noise is my left rear. You know what I mean? You
that's
can actually
nice.
Identify
where the tire noise is coming from, so you can balance the throttle based on which tire is singing much easier than you can.
I guess that would be nice.
Yeah, it's cool. It's easier to get out of a corner, but it's harder to get into a corner with one. Yeah,
yeah. I still rely on just turbo noises and exhaust just blowing my ears out.
No, it's a weird thing to get used to.
Yeah,
I certainly don't prefer it, but it definitely like reprograms your shit a little bit.
Right.
So the point of it was to get into Time Attack.
It's easy. A lot of people don't realize how easy it is.
I think that's what I was getting at.
It's like there's multiple classes. So let's start at the bottom. We got enthusiast class. So that is like a bare bones car where there's not much done to it. It's very inviting and welcoming to anybody who wants to try the sport out.
Yeah, I think you have to have a full interior, right?
Yeah, most likely full interior. If it didn't come turbocharged, it better not be turbocharged, because mm-hmm. then you're up in street class. Like, it's very welcoming, and I think tires are probably just the edge that each car has mm-hmm. over the next. I'm not sure how much modification you can do to them, but I don't think it's a ton. I think a little bit of suspension. I don't think you can mess with aerodynamics too much.
Yeah.
But...
like stock body, stock displacement, and it can't have aftermarket forced induction. Yeah.
Yeah. So pretty basic. But yeah, I mean, that's in class that's open to just about everybody out there who wants to try it.
But the thing about Time Attack is it's sort of just like doing a track day, except you have a transponder on your car and they give you a trophy.
And you're split up in a different group. But yeah.
Yeah. I mean, exactly. There's no real contact. In theory, people shouldn't be racing you for that corner.
Yeah.
You know, like passing is done. I think in enthusiast class, is it open passing in enthusiast class?
I never did enthusiast class, so I'm not entirely sure.
Be passing on straights in enthusiast class. Could certainly. Be.
Or wave bys only.
Yeah. Or point bys or something. Yeah. Like, it's pretty much, he's got up like just like there's a lot of just totally normal sports cars that do it, like crazy fucking super wing nutty cars.
Yeah,
and then it gets crazy.
Oh dude, it's addicting. So yeah. I dare you to start off an enthusiast class and not want to move up.
Yeah,
I dare you.
There's because people build some funky ass aero. That's Will All Young's car right there, that Civic.
Yes,
and he has the front wheel drive record at Buttonwillow. He ran a 137,
extremely fast,
which is, for those who don't know Buttonwillow,
Jesus,
that is like batshit fast.
Yeah.
For any car. I mean, for anything. Yeah. Like, what are you running there? What's your best there?
My best of 47, 147.
That's still very
fast. I'm stoked on that.
Like, that's really fast.
I'm happy with that time.
Yeah. Like, I think, let me think, what stock vehicle could do that? Like, maybe a new ZR1 might be able to do that.
A 47?
I think maybe.
I don't know. Right. The right driver is obviously the biggest part of the equation. But
I'm talking about with a pro.
Nothing I can afford, probably.
You'd need a $150,000 sports car easy to
at
do
minimum.
That. At minimum.
Absolutely.
Yeah, and a very good
minimum.
Driver. Yeah.
Yes.
Like a ZR, what did you run at Road Atlanta?
Road Atlanta was a 130.
Okay. So a ZR1, Randy Pope's in a ZR1 can do a 26 at Road Atlanta.
In a stock ZR1?
Yeah.
Oh, that makes me feel terrible about myself.
Well, Road Atlanta has a massive back straight. A ZR1 has 750 horsepower.
Yeah.
It's got long fucking legs. It's got long legs. You know what I mean? There's more room at Road Atlanta. The gap would be bigger at Road Atlanta than at Buttonwillow for sure. Buttonwillow doesn't have like, I mean, it's got like straightaways, but not
like the front straight mostly.
Yeah, it doesn't have like a fucking straight where you're going.
Holy shit straight.
Yeah, you cross that in a ZR1, you cross that kink at almost 170.
Yeah,
you run. You think is your car geared out at like 160 maybe?
Well, I had an issue with my Subaru every single time I've been to Road Atlanta. There's a top speed governor that we haven't been able to get rid of.
No way. From the factory.
Yeah, as stupid as that might sound,
that does.
We had to search through some tuning. We think we have it figured out now. But, dude, I would get up to, like, just shy of 160, something around there, and I would lose all throttle input, and the car would go back to idle.
Oh.
So,
that's bad.
So, that 130.
So, you have to, like, hold at 159?
I have to hold at, like, we didn't know if it was an RPM thing. We didn't know if it was a fuel cut thing in sixth gear. We didn't know what it was, but then did a little bit of searching, and it turns out there's a top speed governor that's hard-coded at X amount of miles per hour.
Really? I've never heard this before.
Dude, I'm the only one with this problem. It's ridiculous. Like, no race car has a top speed governor. Yeah, right here.
I've never heard of this one before.
Yeah.
What RPM does that happen at in sixth gear, like, give or take? Like, is there still a bunch of room on the tack?
There's more room. Yeah, dude. I gotta basically, like, I get it up to sixth gear, and I get it to where it, like, sounds right, and then I back off to half throttle.
Oh, man. That's how frustrating is that in a race car?
Oh, dude, I've got 30 PSI of boost waiting for me at my right foot.
Oh, it's terrible.
But instead, I just back it off to like 5 pounds maybe just to keep.
Yeah. Short tracks only.
Yeah, no.
No, that's
Rotorland is a blast, but yeah, dude, I'd love to be able to hold
huge racetrack.
Yeah.
It beats the shit out of cars, that track.
Yeah, dude, Auto Club Speedway is another one. Yeah. That Roval. Rovals will destroy engines. Like, not only are you just like six gear pegged, which is just so much load and so much RPM, but you're at an angle.
Yeah.
Where's that oil going?
Yep.
Yeah, the oil's not wanting to go up and spray into your engine.
It's very dry sump friendly.
Yes, exactly.
I ran a supercharged Huracan at the Roval there.
That sounds
fun. I saw 177 on the fucking front straight. Just fucking mobbing in that thing.
Yeah, but that's the other dangerous part about that track is that it's so wide and it's so banked. You don't realize how fast you're going until you give it that steering input.
Until it tightens up.
Until you go to turn and feel the car, you're just like, okay, this is boring, this is boring, this is boring.
Yeah.
And then you go to turn, it's like, oh dear God, this car, it does not, like.
All of a sudden you're understeering on banking and you go, oh, this is fucking weird.
Understeering at 170 miles an hour. Yeah, it's a
little sketchy. Was in Vegas yesterday and did the NASCAR experience in Vegas for a story, which is like a.
Okay.
It was fun. The people were great. It was a good time. You know, it's a fairly commercial grade Vegas experience, in the sense that you don't need any experience to do it. And if you have experience, you definitely want to do one of the more advanced programs they have, because at the very basic one, like the intro, whatever, like you don't get to go very fast.
Well, think about the random note. Like, oh, anybody can sign up to this.
Oh, people would die.
Oh, people would die for sure.
The way they have it is fine. I'm totally okay with this. I'm 100% on board with the way they do it.
Yeah.
But I did like the more advanced one in NASCAR. So it's at Las Vegas Motor Speedway, which is a mile and a half oval. At the top one, dude, I was going 160 without lifting the whole way. 160 just on all the bank was so 160 on
so
that
your right
banking,
foot is just flat the entire time.
Yeah,
with some sort of speed governor.
They put an MSD limiter on it at 5500, so you're flat and you don't lift for the corners. It's like, wow, this
weird
thing really really stuck. If they remove the governor entirely, you would have to lift a bit for the corners. But it made me think about Days of Thunder and all the fucking downshifting that happens. It's like, yo, bro, ain't
dude,
no fucking downshifting.
If you want to pass the car in front of you, just upshift.
Ain't no downshifting,
dude,
son.
Just, Fast and Furious, like, how many times did they shift in Fast and Furious 1 during that famous
drag racing scene? That Evo is a 37 speed. It's a semi-truck.
All you gotta do is upshift and you'll go fast. That's the name of the game.
So wait, how much fucking power is your shit make on 30 pounds of boost?
Okay, right now, so we dumbed it down a little bit. The most I was running, like, last year was 33 PSI.
That's a lot.
It's a lot, dude. In four cylinders, they don't love that. So right now, we're at 27 PSI, making 598 horsepower at the wheels.
That's a lot.
Yeah, dude. It's a four cylinder. It's 2.5 liter, and it's an EJ, so it's way too many pieces for a
block.
What's
your fucking range? Where does your turbo come on? Like, do you get anything below $5,000?
Oh, absolutely.
Oh, you do? Okay.
Yeah. It's a Garrett GTX Gen 2 3076.
Which means what?
It means it's a relatively small turbo, and it's responsive, but it also kicks some ass up top.
Do you have to run? Were you in E85?
Yeah. Dude, E85 is where it's at. I just run pump E85 too. So, for one, it's cheaper and it's easier to get and all that. But, dude,
it's fine for race cars.
Yeah.
Street cars, E85 sucks.
There's just not enough pumps.
Yeah.
I wish there was more pumps.
And the car goes through it three times faster than it goes through pump gas.
Exactly. So, the price difference kind of like it just becomes null at that point.
Yeah.
But going from, switching nothing but fuel on that car, back when I was on a previous EFR turbo, I went from 396 horsepower to 500.
Just with fuel.
With E85, going from 91 octane to E85 with a tune.
Yeah, that's
And
a big
went
difference.
From 350 foot-pounds of torque to 496, I believe.
That's where you start breaking
that's
shit.
Like, that's like 150 foot-pounds of torque and 100 horsepower at the wheels just by switching fuel.
It's a big difference.
It was ridiculous.
In my Focus RS, going from 91 to 100 octane tune, I got a plus 50, plus 50 doing nothing else in my street car.
In which car?
In my Focus RS.
Okay, so it is turboed, right?
Yeah, it's a 2.3 turbo, but it's stock. I mean, it was a completely stock
with
turbo.
With no tune adjustment, no nothing.
Just the tune for the different fuel.
Okay, gotcha.
Yeah. It was it was a significant
Yeah, and then
difference.
You add bigger turbo and add all this, and the increase just becomes like a percentage at that point.
It's E85 is great at a racetrack.
Yeah.
Do they have a pump for it there?
I wish.
You just bring drums and shit?
I just bring, a bunch of 5 gallon little VPs with me.
At what point do you have to start trailering that car? I mean, you do now, obviously.
I do now to races for the simple fact that I need to be able to not worry about taking it home.
Yeah.
I need to be able to absolutely thrash it.
Is this street legal?
It is, dude.
Do you fuck with it on the street ever?
I do. Yeah.
I bet the cops fucking love that with orange wheels and shit. They fucking love that.
Oh, yeah. There's a video of it on the freeway right there.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. That's on the 14.
That is the 14 north. There you go.
Yeah. That's a good place to test cars. Not really.
Yeah.
It's not a good place to test cars.
No.
You go to fucking prison. That sounds right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's
rowdy.
That's one of the things I like. I tried very hard to keep with this car. Is that it's okay? Technically, it's street legal, so I can drive it to shows and whatnot.
Mm.
I wanted to kind of going back and forth with Airlift about this. One of their things, and that obviously I want to try to incorporate into my everything I do, is being able to show it as well, not just to where it's like, okay, you're only ever going to see this thing at a racetrack or it's on a trailer. I don't drive it often on the streets. Like I said, it used to be a daily, but not anymore. But if I'm going to a show, like this weekend, I'll be at the Stance Nation SoCal show.
Is there a Stance Nation SoCal show?
Where is it, dude. Orange County Fairgrounds, I believe it is.
All right, cool. What day?
Sunday.
Oh, that's too bad. Radwood.
Are you gone?
Radwood Sunday.
I don't know what Radwood is.
Really? Oh, Radwood is the 80s and 90s car show. It's fucking huge now, dude. It's blown up in the last year. Huh. It's touring. All the guys who run it quit their fucking day jobs. It's like blown up.
Oh shit!
It's at the Peterson Museum. It's gonna be rad. It's gonna be awesome.
Okay, okay.
Yeah, yeah.
Gotcha.
I got cars to show. Fucking, I've got costumes. It's the whole deal.
Costumes.
It's '80s night. I got my Biggie Smalls outfit.
Oh, okay, that sounds sick.
Yeah, it's totally. It's themed.
So there's a theme to everything.
Yeah,
that's dope.
Yeah,
but yeah, like if I'm heading to a show or something, I will make it a point to drive it to that show.
Yeah.
So I wanted to keep that and like. You might laugh, but if we build a new engine, I break it in on the streets.
Well, no, that makes sense.
I mean, it's like, yeah, I'm trying not to get arrested at the same time. But yeah, I mean, everything I do with this car, if I'm testing brakes or whatever it might be, I'm going to go out on some road that is not very popular.
Yeah, it's fine.
Yeah.
I go to the canyons.
Yeah.
I understand.
But
the fuck is idling outside, man? Someone's got some shit out there.
Something.
These windows... We got lucky. They stopped fucking jackhammering outside just before we did the two. It was like literally I got here at 1:30 and then I was like, oh, this is going to be terrible.
It's gonna sound good.
It's the new studio is August. August we'll have a new studio.
Okay.
All right. So what are, if any, the differences between the Time Attack series? Are there really any or is it all kind of the same?
The rules are slightly different. You have... Okay, for example, let's say Grid Life versus Global Time Attack.
Yeah.
And I only know really the rules that...
for your class?
Are affecting me.
Mm-hmm.
So like tires, tread wear rating.
Right.
That is something for me to where it's like, I think Grid Life is 100 tread wear and Global Time Attack is 80.
Okay.
80 opens the door for a Hankook TD.
Uh-huh.
Hankook TDs shit on every other tire even close to its range as far as grip and speed and all that.
Okay.
Problem with Hankook TDs is that you can't get them anymore. So
they stopped making them?
Apparently they don't ship them to the US anymore or something like that. I'd love to find some, but like if you see anybody out with them right now, they probably have a manufacturing date of between 2011 and 2014.
Oh, yeah. So they're done.
Yeah, my friend Daniel was running them at Super Lap. And he had a blowout with one of them.
Yeah.
Their manufacturing date was 2014.
I cannot imagine racing on a 5-year-old tire. Fuck that.
Exactly. But if your tires stay alive, you are going to go fast
until you fucking roll.
Yes. You're going to go so fast if those tires don't blow up.
What's the next best tire? If you can't have that.
The next thing we're trying to get, if we drop the tread wear rating, which I'm personally trying to talk Jason into it at Global Time Attack. Mm. If we drop the tread wear rating to, I believe it's 60. There's a Super Trofeo tire, Pirelli, right?
Yeah.
So that's supposed to be pretty quick and actually last a long time and have a little bit more of an advantage. Right now, I'm running Bridgestone RE71s.
Oh yeah, those are good.
They're good. Your first hot lap versus your second hot lap, you're gonna notice a pretty big difference in grip. It's like they have a peak to where they work great for like a lap.
And then they fall off.
But they fall right off.
Yeah. Well, they add. What about the fourth, fifth, and sixth hot laps?
I wouldn't know because my coolant temperatures are wrecked by that
really?
Point. Yeah.
Is that what you get? You get two?
Two laps.
You get two.
Per session. One hot lap, one cool down lap, another hot lap.
Wow.
That's it. I get two chances every session.
That's fucking so.
So put together a weekend of, let's say, a total of five sessions.
That's so,
I get 10 laps.
That's so, dude, that's tough.
It's
man.
Time attack.
I really like endurance racing. I go out and do a 90 minute session.
Yeah.
It's great.
That's a different world, dude.
I fucking dice it up. It's in a slow ass Miata.
Yeah, I love Miatas.
Yeah, it's
love
fun.
Them. Yeah,
it can be frustrating too if the car breaks and you're down for 2 hours or something watching a guy change a gearbox out. But like, if it works, I get 3 hours of track time.
This
weekends.
Is true. It's
nice.
A very different world.
Yeah.
Like I recently took my daily, the 350Z.
Yeah,
I took that to Buttonwillow because I wanted to just kind of go have fun. Like the Subaru it's fast as shit. I mean, relatively speaking, like something that I've built and everything like that. Like I love the car to death, but it's stressful. It's a stressful car. Like. You got to worry about your engine staying one piece, your tire wear, your expenses per day are just astronomical.
Yeah.
So I took the 350Z as the daily. Like, dude, this thing should be able to just run 25-minute sessions with no issues.
It should.
So that's what I did. I mean, I broke some shit, but...
Did it run for 25-minute sessions?
Yeah. And I destroyed, like, I broke some stuff, man.
Yeah.
Like, just the heat from the first session, I'm still dealing with it.
Didn't 350Zs have some cooling issues? I think they had some cooling issues and some brake duct issues, right? Like, they couldn't get heat on the brakes?
The brakes, yeah. My brakes, they all changed colors.
Yeah.
So then I killed the brake booster, too.
Oh, really?
Which I'm currently, like, as of today, I'm trying to find one. So I found one in Sun Valley that I'm probably going to pick up tomorrow.
Right.
But anyways, the first session destroyed the brakes on that car.
Yeah.
And then after that, it was like, see, in my brain, I'm like, okay, my Subaru can do this corner at this speed. And I'm treating my daily Z, which is relatively stock.
Like it's your race car?
Like it's a full-blown race car. And I'm going off, and I think I was with Speed Ventures. They pulled me in and wanted to kick me out because I went off like three times in one session I'm trying to push this car to 1,000%. Which I shouldn't be.
Yeah, they probably had a point.
Oh, dude, yeah. Absolutely. Like, I was spinning backwards. I was going off. I was splitting rumble strips. I ripped the skid plate off the bottom.
Cut an
O2 sensor. Like,
I punched
the radiator with
car.
The... Oh, yeah. And it's like this super clean daily that I got myself. And I was like, okay, I'm not going to do track. I'm not going to do track with it. And then here I am. And it's like, rumble strips, man. One of them punched the radiator upwards.
Really?
Punctured a hose, kicked the reservoir out onto the belt while it was spinning, so it blew a hole through that.
Like, oh, you are good at breaking shit.
Yeah, so then I had to drive that thing to work the next day, too. This is Sunday night at Buttonwillow.
You know what's, if you want a car to, and they're not my favorite cars, but if you want a
Miata.
Car. No, I was going to say, that really, really takes a beating,
yeah.
Camaros. A Camaro SS. Look, not my favorite car.
I can't do something that's not Japanese or Euro, though.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Well, I didn't know you were racist.
I'm picky.
No, Camaros have this really big frontal area.
Okay.
And the radiators just get so much airflow. And the engines are designed to survive the small mouth cooling of a Corvette.
Okay.
And so you give them four times as much air up front.
Gotcha.
And they just, you can just beat the ever-loving piss. Now, I'm not a huge Camaro fan.
Yeah.
When the 2010 came out, I was like, ugh. And they improved it a lot since then.
Right.
And the fucking 1LE is bonkers. But if you want a car that will survive the most abusive driving you can throw at it, a Camaro SS will totally
now,
take it.
Now, being that that's a heavy car, did you have any issues with the brakes?
If you run proper pads and fluid, the hardware itself is fine.
Okay.
Yeah. And in the ZL1 1LE, like, I fucking had I got a full day of VIR by myself with this car.
That's a lot of abuse.
In August, and it was a lot of abuse.
That's so much abuse.
And it took a shit kicking, and it was perfectly happy to do it. It had those Trofeos on them, actually.
That's
standard
okay.
equipment on that car.
Nice.
They had good progressive breakaway. It was very nice.
See, that's something that the RE71, for example, does not have.
It doesn't?
No.
It just goes?
It works as well as it possibly can for like a lap, maybe two. But even on the second lap, dude, I know that if I go faster on my second lap, then I can go faster, period, because I just need to do it on the first lap while they're cooler.
Yeah. Cup 2s are like that, too. Pilot Sport Cup 2s.
Okay.
You get one great one, and then you're a second off after that.
Ugh.
There's no coming back from it.
That's frustrating.
Yeah. That's why I prefer Super Sports. Even if they're a little slower, they're just more consistent. I can run 10, 12 laps within a second of each other, and the tire will just stay where it's at.
Yeah.
Because it's so frustrating to fucking have one good one and never be able to catch it.
Yes, but that's also, like, that's kind of all I know. Like,
time attack.
I mean, I drift for fun on the side, but it's like the time attack, man. It's you get very few chances to do something impressive.
Yeah.
Like, you better be like I've lost before by missing a shift heading towards I missed a second to third shift and I ended up losing by point. I've lost by point one. I've lost by like point oh. I've lost by hundreds. Like it's everything's day. It's so stressful. It becomes so stressful, man.
It's crazy with Time Attack how like you have to be that precise and put that perfect lap together.
Dude, it's a mental game. It's not easy.
With endurance racing, you kind of always have another lap.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's like if you haven't lost position, it's like, all right, I was a quarter second off this lap, but like
I'll make it up.
I'll make it up or whatever. And, you know, the car's still moving, right? The car's not stopped. It's still going, you know? And so you have a chance to kind of work on it in more real time. You don't have to sit there for 2 hours and stew in it.
Think about what you just did. Watch all your
session.
Video footage. See how much you hate your driving style.
Yeah.
Like, why am I braking so early into this turn?
Yeah. If people want to actually like go Time Attack racing though, do you recommend like starting with the stockest car possible?
Yeah.
Totally.
See,
right?
See time and just have fun with it. Like, don't get overwhelmed right away.
Yeah.
So I think you're going to burn yourself out really quick because this sport and your car, it will shit on you.
Yeah.
It will break you down. Mm. And so having as much fun with it, at least in the beginning and trying to carry that through, I think is really important because it's very easy to get overly competitive with it. And then suddenly you don't even know why you're doing it anymore.
Yeah. If you give it's the McLaren scouts aren't there. Like, you know what I mean? Like, it's nice to get a trophy. It's nice to stand on the podium.
Yeah.
If you have sponsors, it's nice to make them happy.
Yeah.
But like, you know, there's only so much you can do at a certain level. It's like, you can't drive yourself too fucking crazy.
Yeah. Right? But at the same time, it's like,
but it's expensive
a lot of us,
to do.
It's
like
very expensive.
Every weekend has got to be a couple of grand. I mean, to be there.
Absolutely.
Between your
just driving
your
my
tire.
Z that weekend, dude. I think I spent like $2,000 to $3,000 that weekend alone.
Yeah.
I'm breaking things.
Yeah, dude. I've spent $3,000 racing a stupid Miata. where the car's broke, and I've ended up with an hour of seat time over a whole weekend. Then I flew somewhere to do it. You know what I mean?
I know the feeling. Last time,
that poor bastard who imagine that kid drove from fucking Michigan and broke his car.
Okay, yeah. Oof. I have that exact story. I drove.
Really?
Me and my dad drove. We brought the car out to Gingerman for grid. Life
from Los Angeles.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Did you drive it there?
We trailer it.
Okay. Yeah.
Right. We throw it in a toy hauler that we originally got for dirt bikes in desert, and then it happened to fit the car in it. So it's now like the rolling house that we throw a car into.
That's a nice thing to have.
Yeah, definitely. Thank God for my pops.
Yeah.
So we drove it, what is that, like 2,000 miles from that? My engine blew up within 1 minute. It was a 3-day event. It's a total of, I think, 9 days because it takes 3 days to get there, 3 days during the event, 3 days to get home. So 9 days off of work.
Yeah.
Yeah, just all the work.
For half a lap.
Months of preparation into just getting everything ready. You're going to spend the same, like, almost no matter what, if you break something or not.
Yeah.
In a way. So, yeah, I didn't even get to do one lap.
That's
I got,
sucks. And then
I got,
plus a bill for a new engine.
Oh, yeah. On top of it, yeah. I cracked the block, I believe it was.
Jesus, he's Subarus.
Yeah, man.
Remember
blocks.
That guy? I don't know. Were you there at Grid Life? I think it was this past year where there was a dude there who showed up with a broken car. And he literally rebuilt a BMW cylinder head in the fucking parking lot for the entire weekend.
Holy
and finished
shit.
One lap on the very last session of the very last day. He completed one lap after he had you might remember him because he set up like a checkerboard floor under the car.
Holy crap.
Completely outdoors, no tent, no nothing, and he fucking did like built an engine in the
that sounds like a hell of a story. Like, there needs to be a video or a vlog or something for that.
There was some kind of thing written about it. I mean, it just seems like a glutton for punishment. There was a guy we shared a garage with at Mid-Ohio this past year where they broke their car in qualifying, and it was an E30, and they managed to find three other E30 engines and combined them into one working engine.
Oh, boy.
I mean, the heroic fixing that goes on at some of these events.
Yeah, I mean, dude, you've got, like, Will I Young's been through it. A lot of the high... I'm going to say any of the unlimited class cars, those guys are gnarly.
They break shit.
For one, you're building a spaceship of a car.
Yeah.
The thing is just, it is being wrung out to its last little bit of existence every single lap, horsepower-wise, grip. Mm-hmm. Like, these cars are just brutal. Like, I think my car's built for one lap. No, look at an unlimited class car.
James Houghton, dude.
James Houghton's
car goes through a gearbox every
session. Oh, my goodness.
Session.
I think it's fourth gear or fifth, like, every single time. But that's what I'm getting at. These unlimited guys, they are blowing engines like and then rebuilding or finding another one that evening, spending all night throwing a new engine into the car.
H-O-U-G-H-T-E-N, I think, right? Yeah. H-O-U-G-H-T-O-N?
O-N.
O-N, T-O-N. Yeah, that's it. That's the Integra. This motherfucker is gnarly.
Yeah, love this dude.
He is a maniac, and he runs... So what did I say? Randy Popes ran a 26 at Road Atlanta in a brand new ZR1.
Okay.
This guy's got an Integra and ran a 23. Like,
yeah.
I think it's 800 horsepower or 700.
Something right around there,
700
yeah.
horsepower, fucking Integra.
Four-cylinder still, yeah.
And he goes through a gearbox every yeah. single session.
Yeah.
He shows up the track with like five gearboxes.
Yeah, it's you so have to crazy. At that point. It's like we're taking these cars that are not meant to do what they're doing. And the reliability factor is pretty much completely out the window.
Yeah.
And then, yeah, throw 800 horsepower at it.
I don't know why they bother with Evos, too. Every Evo seems to fucking break even more than
I mean,
Subarus.
I could say the same thing about Subarus, dude. Like,
what breaks more, Subaru or an Evo?
I don't have an Evo, so I don't really know. But I know the engines generally last longer on the Evos. Evos could have a different problem, though. Like, I will say the Subaru, the engine is the hardest thing to keep reliable.
Mm-hmm.
I don't care who you have building it. You have the best guys building it. It doesn't matter. It's just a design thing.
Yeah.
You've got all these pieces forming like a block and heads and all this.
Yeah. Yeah.
And everything tweaks as it's being abused. So past a certain horsepower number, it's just out the window.
Sally was in here a couple of months ago and okay. she was I guess whoever her sponsor is, and I'm sorry, I can't
IAG?
Remember it. Yeah, they have a full like billet block.
Yeah.
That you can get. It's like $10,000.
Okay, yeah, it's like 10 plus. Yeah. I legitimately thought about getting one of those before this season.
Yeah,
because I'm just like we're throwing up our hands and being like, why are these engines not staying together? It's a different reason why it fails every time. It's just so frustrating.
Yeah,
but let's say I spend $12,000 on a billet block. That's just a piece of metal. What happens when I break a rod? And I just destroyed the $12,000 block.
Right.
Like,
yeah.
I've got other pieces in that engine that could very well break
yeah.
and take out my way too expensive block. So it's like, I would love to try a billet block, but I'm not willing to sport that price tag.
I understand. I don't know who that's for, honestly.
I think there's some dudes running it. Like, Australia, I think, is where, like, the first one was done or something
really?
Like that.
That makes sense.
But even those things, they're coming out of the car and getting rebuilt, like pretty frequently from what I understand. I don't know too much about it.
Yeah.
But I know that if it was a solid, done, no longer have to question your EJ thing, I think we'd be doing it over here more,
yeah.
too.
Makes sense. If y'all want to fucking ask us some shit, if you're watching us live, get in the super chat now. We're going to do this for the next, I don't know, 20 minutes or so. Let's see, what do we got? Justin says, regarding bad streets and suspensions, how much of a difference does driving an SUV or crossover help with potholes and bad streets compared to a normal car? I've lost 5 tires and 3 rims this year. Jesus Christ.
That's a lot.
My advice is that it's not so much about crossover versus sedan as it is about the size of your rims and the profile of your tires.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. Bump. Profile of tire comes in hugely.
Yeah.
Especially for speed bumps and potholes specifically.
Yeah. The hard edge, right, is where you bend that rim.
The hard edges.
So you could drive an Escalade on 23s and you're going to have not as much cushion as a Camry on 16s.
Correct, yeah.
So
if you've got a low profile tire, 20, I've seen some people run like 20 series sidewalls, which is like rubber band. That's when you're going to bend wheels and pop tires.
Yeah. I mean, if you really want to not bend wheels, you need to run like more than a 40 series sidewall, maybe even up to like 50 series or 55. Like the more sidewall you can run,
the more sidewall, the less wheel bendage.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, like, yeah, to a certain extent, like, yeah, like a crossover, like, may have some more suspension travel to absorb some of that. But if the crossover's got big rims.
Yeah, if it's a donk and it's
done.
Got the rubber band tires
fucking,
on it.
I mean, dude, my dad had a Porsche Cayenne turbo that had, you know, 21s or 22s, whatever it was, and fucking he bent rims.
Yeah.
And whereas, you know, you have a car with smaller wheels and more, even if it's a regular, like I said, a Camry or something, you're not going to bend a fucking wheel.
Yeah, usually pretty set.
Although, and I have found, in my personal experience, it's just anecdotal, German stock wheels. Like, I had a Mini, my pops had a BMW, my mom had an Audi. All three of those suffered bent rims, whereas under the same conditions, we've had an American and 2 Japanese cars that did not.
Hmm.
Ben rims. So I don't know. I'm just throwing that out there. But BMW was a particularly bad offender for Ben rims. So, but yeah, sidewall, sir. Alan says, "Oh, the Genesis one take was hilarious." You are welcome, sir. I just made a video, and there was something fucking sloshing about in the glove box, and the sound didn't seem quite so bad until I got home, and I was like, "Oh, it's bad." But I had Zach annotate it in a funny way as an editor, and it came out really good. If you haven't seen that yet, go watch it, because it's silly and we did a fun thing. Austin says, when it came to the car storage facility, I'm building a collector car storage facility over here. How did I come up with the pricing system for spots? Is there a pricing scale for having your car lower on lift or one plant? So the pricing system is based on my costs, and I'm charging the least amount of money I can get away with charging because it's going to be really expensive. There's basically three levels. So if you take four spots, you get a quad stacker unit. You get four spots all to yourself on your own stacker. That is one price level. If you want two spots, you get a tandem nose to tail in the basement. That's another price level. And then if you have a single, that's another price level. And those are all for cars that you don't ever want touched or moved by my staff. And then if you have a car that's frequently used and that you don't mind my staff shuffling around once in a while, like if you have like a more normal car, like an M3 or a modern exotic or something that you don't mind, my staff just moving out of the way once in a while, there's a slightly lower valet spot. So I said three, but there's actually four levels, and it's dependent on how you feel about people touching or moving your car. That's an option to have that be a never or a sometimes, and how frequently the car needs to go out, but more importantly, by how many spots you're going to take. If you're interested in storing your car in West LA, Matt at the smokingtire.com, I'll get you on the list. We open in August. Andrew says, I'm looking to move on from my 2013 Mustang V6 to a Honda S2000. What do I look for when buying, AP1 or AP2? You know anything about 2000s?
First of all, do it.
Yeah, I think that's an upgrade, a 2013 V6 Mustang to an S2000. Yeah,
I generally hear, I don't have an S2000 personally. It's always been on my list to acquire at some point. Mm. I admire them a lot. From the people that I have asked with S2000s, they generally say go AP2.
Yeah, I know they give you a why?
I haven't gotten too much into it.
So what I've heard from S2000 fans, and I've driven both, but I didn't drive them. I drove them both, but I drove them like a year apart. So I could not definitively say, yeah. What I've heard is the suspension is a little more sorted with the two.
Okay.
But the engine is a little more fun with the one.
I know the AP1 revs higher.
It revs higher. You get more an angrier, higher revving with the one.
Okay.
But you get a more sorted suspension, especially at the rear, with the two.
And the one was FC20? F20, something like that?
Yeah, 20 versus...
So 2.0 versus a 2.2?
Yes.
So maybe the AP2 has a little more torque.
A little more torque of the two. That's what they say.
Okay.
They're both really nice cars.
Yeah.
The prices are not getting any lower. Now is a 2013 V6 Mustang is a depreciating asset, whereas you can buy an S2000, and if you keep it in the same condition you bought it in, you can definitely hold it. I'm not saying you're going to make money, but it's a good place to park some cash that you can, while you're enjoying the car. So it's up to you which one. I'm not going to say one is better than two or two is better than one, but like, those are the differences that I have been told. Jeff says, favorite mod to a car that does not make more horsepower or torque but changes driving experience dramatically?
Seat.
A seat. That's a good one. Or like a nice bucket seat.
Seats are overlooked often.
Yeah. What seats do you have in your car?
I use Racetex.
Oh, yeah?
Because I'm tall and skinny, and they just tend to fit. And if I wasn't going to go seat, I would probably go differential.
Okay, yeah, diff could definitely, like
diff
a limited slip diff, yeah.
And if you want to drift, obviously you're going to need something.
For sure.
But even if you're doing like time attack grip, stuff like that, diffs help tremendously. Like my Subaru, for example, replaced the front, center, and rear. And the corner speed just increased massively.
Really? Do they lock up in a different way, or what is the difference from stock to what you have now?
Yeah, just they can actually fully lock. but they do it very smoothly. So I use like I use OS Gaiken diffs.
Mm-hmm.
They're known. They're super lock. They're known for being very smooth, and I actually have one in my Z as well. Driver friendly. Like even if you wanted to drive, you're not going to hear a bunch of clunking and stuff like that. It's very aggressive, but it's very smooth with that level of aggression. So it can lock completely. Which with the all-wheel drive car helps tremendously.
It's not a knob, is it? It just does.
No,
what it does.
I think they generally use like 32 clutch plates, so okay. it's a limited slip, mechanical limited slip. It doesn't use viscous or anything like that, but help tremendously with corner speeds and grip.
That's a good one. I think I'm with you on seats. I'm a big fan of the Recaro Profi XL. I'm a bigger guy, and like that's a really good seat. I totally agree. I've changed the seats in almost every
any
car I've had that's like older, I've definitely changed the seats in. And also I'm gonna say tires. I mean, tires, you know, you can make a fucking world of difference by putting on good tires.
Absolutely.
Also like super lightweight wheels too can make a really big difference too.
Yeah.
Maybe not dramatically in terms of feel, but certainly in terms of lap times, and if you're doing any kind of telemetry, you can feel a difference. And like I really felt it, like I drove a GT3 with stock wheels.
Oh, okay.
And then I pulled into the pits and they put on the fucking carbon fiber wheels.
Oh, you got a back-to-back comparison?
The carbon revolution wheels. And I was like, fuck. I was like, these wheels are 15 grand, you know, whatever.
Wow.
I got out of the car and went, oh my God, like the turn in was so much sharper. The brakes felt like they worked better.
Really?
Yeah, it felt like I'd unleashed 30 or 40 horsepower because the rolling resistance was less. Like, it was fucking shocking. And you'd have to have that back to back.
Yeah,
I've
never had that back to back with
spoiled.
Light wheels versus.
Yeah, it was a big, big difference. It really sold me on those carbon fiber wheels.
Yeah. If you can afford them.
Yeah, no, they're super expensive, and Philip says, which car would you rather take down a canyon road, a turbocharged FRS or a modified Evo 10?
They have the pros and cons.
I would say Evo 10 because on a canyon I'm not going to be sliding so much, and that's what I would want to be doing in the FRS.
I would potentially go FRS because it's lighter. Okay. As long as the turbo's not too big.
Yeah.
But I would want a responsive, smaller turbo with the FRS.
My favorite FRS had a Rotrex in it. Okay. It was bitchin'.
Yeah.
So it's linear, like 280, 290 at the tires. It was just delightful.
Yeah.
It was such a good little car. It was a big fan.
I've heard
of that.
The FRSs handle really well.
They do. Oh, they're great. Yeah. I mean, if you put sticky tires on them, they handle like nothing. And on the hard Prius tires, they're really fun to slide around. But yeah, you get a little bit of boost in there. About 280 at the wheels, and you got a beautifully quick, fun car. Yeah, the steering on them is super, super good. Thank you, Philip. MX304 says, what Honda platform and year would be best for a second street car or entry-level track car? I will upgrade tires, brakes, and seat to start with under $12,000, preferably.
I personally like EGs.
Which one's that? Is it the round hatch?
The roundish hatch.
The round hatch. At Grid Life, dude, it's all fucking Honda hatches, and some of these fools mob.
Yeah.
Like, these guys go out with 120 to 140 horsepower and fly.
Yep.
I'm a big fan of the 99 Civic Si, the coupe,
mm-hmm.
the blue yep. one. I don't know if you're going to get a nice one of those for under 12 grand, but I like those a lot. Anything from the 90s. Like a mid-90s, right, is
probably
where you want to be?
Yeah, I don't. I'm not up to date on Honda stuff. I don't know what the year generation is for the EG.
What's the SI hatchback? Like an 02 or 03 or something like that with the shifter on the dash?
Oh,
they only made
yeah.
it for like a couple of years.
I think it's post-2000.
Yeah, those are kind of cool. I mean, definitely a Civic from between 90 and 2000.
Probably. Especially with that price range, you can have fun with it.
Dude, and they have really good suspension geometries, so you can make them handle really well without making them crazy stiff. Like, they don't need to be crazy stiff.
And they have an engine that will last forever.
Yeah, especially the single cams. You can't kill a single cam. I raced a single cam in Lemons, and the fucking thing had... dude, it had finished, like, 19 Lemons races on this motor. Like, it was
just
unkillable. Like, it was actually an SI chassis that they down-engined to a single cam. It was like, yeah, the fucking VTEC heads explode in endurance racing, so we run only single cam heads.
Jesus.
Yeah.
Gets a job
actually,
done.
You know what? Could you get, what about an RSX? Can you get an RSX for under 12 grand? Are they a little heavy?
I think they're under 12.
Maybe an RSX Type S. That could be pretty cool.
Could be.
RSXs are nicer than most people give them credit for.
I haven't driven one.
You ever driven an RSX Type S? They're nice.
I always liked them growing up. I liked the way they look. Yeah, I still do.
It's a classy style. Looks good. The Type S engine is a really nice engine. Look for an RSX, maybe. You might be able to find a good one there. David Hagsma says, Cody, are you going to Austin? And how long can your car last at 159 miles an hour? Because that straight is crazy long.
Yeah, dude, I was going to mention that. That Coda straight. So Global Time Attack in February, what is it, February 16, 17, mm-hmm. something like that. They're doing Coda, Circuit of the Americas.
Have you driven that track before?
On my simulator. So I've been to the track. I've looked around a bit. But yeah, dude, that straightaway is massive. It's going to be a little bit of a torture test for the four-cylinder, for sure.
You figured out your rev limiter or no?
I think I have it figured out. So I think I can hold full throttle in six gear now.
Can you eliminate your ECU entirely and run a standalone to get around it? Is that a way? A thing to do?
I rock a very simple setup. Like, I use a Cobb access port. That's something that stayed with me since day one.
Yeah.
Factory ECU and a Cobb access port.
That's amazing.
It's nothing.
It's a good
fancy
piece of hardware. I use it for mounting on the Focus as well.
Yeah, they work great. They're so simple. Like, I can monitor just about anything I want through OBD2, and it's simple enough, and it works well for me. Like, my main concern is boost pressure and coolant temperature. So I just have those big, huge staring at me at all times.
Is that the only, like, aftermarket gauge you run? Do you have a fucking face full of gauges?
I have an oil pressure gauge.
Oh, that's a good one to have, too.
Oil pressure and then just the access port.
Yeah, that's easy.
I don't
want to
get crazy with gauges or anything like that. But, yeah, I'm looking forward to Coda for sure. That track's going to be awesome. It's like Formula One track, dude. Like,
yeah, it's huge.
It's big.
Yeah.
It's, I don't even remember how many turns it is.
I think it's 20?
Something,
I think it's 20.
Something close
to
that.
Can you get a map of Coda? I think it's 20 or 21. I feel like it's a lot.
It's a lot. I can tell you, it took me and my buddy a little while to learn on the sim.
What did it say? 20. Yeah, it's 20. Oh, good guess for your boy. 20
turns.
Corners.
That's a lot to remember.
3.4 miles. Let's see, 42 to 52 feet wide. God, it's a wide track. 130 feet elevation change. Beast.
The corners are really weird on that track too. They're kind of like your inner apex on a lot of them is like this sharp kink. So it's going to be interesting because, like, you compare it to Button Willow, for example, Road Atlanta, something like that, where you can flow and just, like, fourth gear and up is where you're at.
Yeah.
I think it's going to be a lot different here with a lot of these corners, and it's going to be trying to set up the best you can on that exit heading into especially that big straight.
Mm-hmm.
But
turn 11 and into that back straight there. I don't like the S's at the end of that back straight. I think they're weird
as
hell.
Okay, yeah. Like I said, I've been working on this on the sim, so I'm learning a lot about it.
Yeah.
The S's seem very strange. Like, generally, I don't know, you try to head through S's and either, like, maintain the same speed or something like that, right? I think these seem like, I mean, in my uneducated opinion, they seem like a decreasing speed S's setup. It's almost like you enter with X amount of speed and you just keep shedding speed, and it feels slow because you're like off throttle just maneuvering through it, and then you have to stay like tight on the right where you exit to set yourself up for the next hard left.
It's a super weird set of corners. It's not my favorite, but I've never driven in real life. I've only played in video games, so I don't know.
Yeah, and the other thing I notice on, you know, in video game world, virtual world, there's these inner, not only the rumble strips, but there's these inner like little peaks, little orange peaks that just scream, I'm going to break your wheel in half.
I wonder if it's to discourage Formula One cars from cutting.
It probably definitely is.
Yeah.
So those worry me a little bit because aggressive aero and wheels, obviously.
Yeah.
Like,
Air up, son.
Yeah, dude, look at Button Willow, for example. Like, I keep mentioning Button Willow because I love that track. It's local. But you can cheat corners a bit, like bus stop, for example. You can bounce that thing and then bounce and slide.
That corner is so funny when you're watching, dude. The clouds of dust that come off that corner because people cut it so hard.
I never, like, when I first took my car to that track, I was doing 2 minute plus lap times because I was going around the rumble strips.
Yeah.
And then once I realized, like, okay, bus stop especially, I'm going to jump that son of a bitch and I'm going to throw the left side of the car into the air.
Yeah.
And then I cut off like 2 seconds just by jumping it.
Mm-hmm.
So I think Coda is going to be a completely different game as far as cheating corners with two tires off.
It should be
like
interesting. I'll mind your repair bills afterwards.
Yeah.
Daily Drive says, howdy, Matt and Cody. Renner 22B number 6 here.
that means?
You have a 22B?
I don't have a 22B.
No, does this guy have a 22B?
Probably,
Renner 22B number 6. If you have a 22B, respect.
Yeah, respect for sure. Probably built by Renner Racing Development.
Yeah, he said, like, oh, are they building, like, replica 22Bs?
They are notorious for doing 22B setups.
They
do a great job.
Really should have bought one of those when they were 35 grand.
We all should have bought one.
20 years ago. He's seen your car in the background a few times when they were finishing up his car. I want to fucking roll your 22B, sir. Hook it up. Hook it the fuck up. Sebastian says, I would love to run a hard Prius tire on my Miata, but they don't make Prius tires in a 14. Any alternatives? Oh, like 14. a good tire for sliding around on a Miata.
I know you can get Federals pretty inexpensive.
Federals are good for sliding.
I've thrown them on my Miatas. I got two Miatas that I used to beat the hell out of. And I was generally running 595 SSs.
We put Federals on our NC Cup Miata race car, and they were hard as a fucking rock. Dude, I don't remember if they were 595s, but they were Federals.
It's
and they
an
were
inexpensive
rock hard
tire where you can get seat time, dude.
Yeah. I don't know of any the Prius tires are literally like eco tires. The problem with 14s is they only make garbage tires or super, super sticky autocross tires in that size.
All of the no-name brands of tires that you'll see on eBay.
Bro, Chinese tires.
Oh, yeah.
Just find some Chinese shit, some Guangzhou fucking tires. I would look in China.
I mean, is he looking for hard tires to just slide and just
I think he
be
just wants to slide
on?
Around, yeah.
Probably just eBay the cheapest thing possible.
Yeah, just look for something with like 600 tread wear and the cheapest tire you could find. Definitely
It'd
from
probably
China.
Be like $35 a piece, dude.
If that.
Yeah.
Yeah, and 14?
14.
Yeah. Scooter tires, bro. Get some fucking motorcycle wheels in that bitch.
Oh, shit.
Last one before we get out of here. Michael Ross says, do you tend to back into parking spaces? To each their own, but I think it might be a sign of a good driver.
I don't, personally.
No?
No.
I sometimes do. It depends on the circumstance.
Yeah.
I do, when I park, I like, you know, I'm a big guy, I have a bad back, so I like to get my door open all the way, if I can.
Yeah.
And so I will back into a parking space if it means that my driver door is facing an empty space as opposed to facing another car.
I don't think that
car.
Much. I just do my best to park away.
Yeah. Away is good. Away, but we're around here,
dude,
there's not much away.
Where you're at right here with all this traffic and
not a lot
limited
of away
space,
to fuck with,
It's a little different than my world of like, oh, let's just park in that corner of the parking lot where there's nothing.
And someone followed up saying, I'd rather back up into stationary objects than back out into moving traffic. That might be an Asian thing. I don't know if it is, Justin, but I like your... sometimes if I know that backing out is going to be a pain in the ass, I'll back in the spot. But I don't have a rule.
I don't have a rule. Yeah, I don't have a rule either.
You want to plug anything before you get out of here? Sponsors? Airlift?
Airlift Performance has been a huge supporter throughout my entire program for years now. Those guys have literally become family. Renner Racing Development is killing it on everything as far as support for engines. I mean, that's the thing with these engines, man. Like, I don't care who you have building them. You can have the best guys building them, which I do, but they're still an EJ25, which
limits.
Was never designed to do the horsepower and stuff that we're doing. So those guys have been, Peter and Damien, those guys have been a huge help.
But is there such a thing as a super reliable 350 horsepower EJ?
The happiest Subaru EJ setup that you're going to have is what they refer to as stage two. So let's say like intake, full exhaust, and a ProTune. Something like that. You make it breathe better. You make it easier to tune. Yimi Sport sets those things up all day long. That is like the happiest that an EJ can be. And it's a 300 plus wheel horsepower setup, I believe.
Yeah. Cool.
So that's definitely the way to do it. But yeah, I mean, the support from everybody, that's one of the great things about this is that I've been racing this series multiple series for a few years now. And just the relationships and everything that I've been able to make. And it's companies in, you know, Florida, like Michigan, like all over the place, and just really getting people involved and finding companies and small companies, big companies, whatever, that believe in what you're doing. AMS Performance, Motovicity out there, like there's all these great dudes that like they've seen your car before, and that to me is like, wait, you kind of know who I am, like that is cool enough for me. So it's been awesome making a bunch of relationships throughout the whole thing. But
that's fucking rad, dude.
Yeah,
good for you.
Yeah,
good for you. And you're fucking fast at Button Willow. It's nice.
I'm trying, but
yeah.
One more shout out to all the boys at BWP watching. all the other apprentices at step ones, they know who they are.
All right.
Yeah.
Well, if you want to, is COTA the next race?
COTA is the next race. So Circuit of the Americas with Global Time Attack. They're referring to that as the Super Lap Battle. They have their own Instagram page now and everything. They are doing that. Like I said, it's February, I believe, 16th, 17th.
Cool.
Something right around there. That'll be the next event to see us at.
And I am pretty sure I will be at Grid Life. The next Grid Life. I saw Stuart at Button Willow, and he's like, "Yeah, you're in." So, if whatever the next Grid Life is, count
the next festival, the big boy festival.
Yeah, the festival. Yeah, yeah.
Usually Gingerman first, right?
I think, but I didn't know if they were going to put this Colorado thing before Gingerman or after. I'm not really sure. But either way, Gingerman's my fucking shit. I love that. Really, really fun time.
That's the crazy thing, that the track is like, to me, it's okay, but the environment is just
yeah,
crazy.
Yeah. And BMW consistently hooks me up with dope cars to drive.
Yes, I've seen you there.
Did you see me go out in the drift session in the M2? It's like Forsberg, Turk, and then me in a press car. It's so ridiculous. It's so dumb.
I want your job.
Yes, it's great until you break it. You know what I mean? If you don't break it, it's all good. But if you have to make that call, ooh, it's not good. All right, Cody Miles, thank you guys very much for listening. Let's see. For the live folks, tomorrow at 5 p.m., we got Blake Hutchinson, the founder of Wanna Go Fast. It's a runway racing outfit. He's a good dude, and he's in town for Radwood and all the festivities. So join us tomorrow, Thursday at 5 p.m. Otherwise, if you're not listening to this one live, I'll see you next time. The Smoking Tire Podcast is powered by Shout Engine. Get your own damn podcast at shoutengine.com. It is easy. You just need a microphone, a connection to the internet, and ideally, something to say. Good night.